KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Bridges Cafe and Catering, located at 2716 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Bridges is a restaurant and catering company that's open daily. More information available at bridgescafeandcatering.net. Lunch was provided by Porcano Taqueria, located in North Portland at 3524 North Mississippi Avenue. Porcano Taqueria has been serving Portland since 2005 and has been committed to both the communities and the food that they serve. More information online at porcanotacos.com or at their two locations on North Mississippi and Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. Dinner was provided by Namaste, located at 8303 Northeast Sandy Boulevard. Namaste incorporates the culture and heritage of India into their restaurant, offering lunch and dinner buffets. They also host special events. More information available at namasteindiancuisine.com. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Eco Film Festival from Friday, April 19th through Sunday, April 21st at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. The Portland Eco Film Festival celebrates Earth Day 2019 with a weekend of films including a special 420 screening of Dreams, a documentary about Brazilian modernist landscape designer Roberto Burl Marx and the world's first giraffeologist who fought for women's rights in scientific fields, and more. Again, that's Portland Eco Film Festival from Friday, April 19th through Sunday, April 21st at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good evening. You are listening to KBOO. The time now is 7:02, and we are here to talk to you a little bit about our membership drive.
Hey, this is Asher Gray, and I'm just here to remind our listeners that our pledge drive is ongoing. So if you love what you hear on the radio, if you love our programming and outreach, you know, just give us a donation. And we also wanted to give thanks to Gwyn and Susan from Portland, both of them.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, and they're renewing members, so that's great. We really love you guys.
That's awesome. What we do here could not be done without you. I personally didn't know a thing about audio and production and, frankly, didn't know any of these people here. Now I do. So,
yeah. Yeah. What's better than knowing people, right?
That's true. Whether it's doing stuff through the newsroom or music shows or, you know, just kind of finding like-minded people, KBOO is the place. So if you go onto our website, it's kboo.fm/give. You can donate, you know, in the 21st century, the internet is the fastest way. Or you can call at 877-500-5266.
That's right, and we have a ton of really great prizes. For example, we have the Democracy Now! T-shirt, which you get as a thank you gift for pledging $120, or you could just do $10 a month and get the shirt. Again, to call, that's 877-500-5266, toll free, and just give us a call. There's plenty of wonderful folks here just standing by the phones waiting to hear from you.
Yeah, and it's not just calling or online. You can even come on by if you'd like and grab one of these awesome KBOO stickers. You know, whenever I see someone with a KBOO sticker, I'm just like, I like what this person is about.
You know, I hear that even on cars, I'll see someone be like, you know, that's a cool person right there.
You can tell they like community, they like the programming, which is different. You know, the program we just had, it's not every day that you get to hear voices, Native American voices, minority voices just coming on fully learning, ready, able, and capable to just share their voice with the world. And that's where they come to KVU, because this is where we can prosper.
It is, and this is where you find people who make you feel appreciated and go, you know, your voice actually matters, and that's so valuable right now.
Definitely empowering.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that folks might not know is you can donate directly through the app. So to our app listeners, there's a donate button. Saves you, you know, calling a phone number or looking up the site. So give that a try.
Yeah, and I mean, you can always call and talk to our awesome volunteers. I'm a volunteer. You how long have you been volunteering here for?
You know, I've only been volunteering for about a year. We moved to Oregon about 2 years ago and been in Portland for about a year.
But, and what do you do here?
I help with planning events, but mostly I just come to the pledge drives, and there's wonderful people back here. I get to talk to listeners, and that's, you know, it's great being able to connect with folks and hearing, you know, where our listeners are, what makes them like KVU. You know, it's meaningful. It's a very meaningful interaction. Even if you just call in to say hi, pledge $5, that's a connection I wouldn't have had before.
Yeah, that's true. And you get to meet so many walks of life, because KVU is for everyone. It's community oriented for the community. And you can go online, donate at kboo.fm/give or call 877-500-5266. We appreciate it. All the different kind of programming that we have here is only made possible by listeners. The community, it's just so great. So nice to be able to count on your neighbor, you know, to look out for you by donating and making your voice heard.
It is. And, you know, we're not a profitable place. Everything is volunteers. So this pledge drive and pledge drives like this, that's what funds our programming. And the programming that you love comes directly from that. So again, the number is 877-500-5266. Give us a call. We're here.
We are here all the time. There's someone here. Believe it or not, always.
Always, 24/7. It's incredible.
Yeah, and it's, again, made possible by you, for you, from us. And we appreciate every cent, every penny. You can call 877-500-5266.
Yep, and, you know, give us a call. We're here. And, again, online, that's kboo.fm. So thank you so much, and if you want to give us a call, I'm back here. You'll get to talk to me.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's another thing. Everyone wins.
All right. Thank you so much, you guys.
No problem. Thank you so much. That's awesome. I'm so glad that we can talk to all of our listeners and have people donate. Tonight, we have a special program. It's my program. My name is Tammy. I didn't introduce myself. And tonight we have my new program. It's the first episode. It's called Popular Education, based on the concept that it's an old concept that people in the lower class used to just kind of help each other out in finding things, whether it was getting education about medicine or anything that was a useful tool for them to become more prosperous in an otherwise very, you know, monarchy driven kind of society. So it was just like KVU is, it's by the people, for the people. And today we have some really interesting interviews that we have with some folks. And another part of the program that I'm pretty happy to have is some music. I get to do that as well. So without further ado, introducing the first episode of Popular Education. And here's some tunes to get us into it.
בראשית ברא אדם את האמונה, אלוהים אחר לכל מדינה. בשקט
באור ירח. אנחנו דור שרוצח. המאמין הלאומי, טרוריסט לאומני, זה לא אלוהי האדמה, זה אלוהי הפחד. אל הנקמה, לא מאמין שיבוא שלום כל עוד יש אלוהים. כל ערב בטלוויזיה, כל ערב בטלוויזיה, הימים עוברים לי ואני מרגיש שזה עוזר לי לברוח, לשכוח הכל, להקים משפחה אחרת. הימים נורים לי ואני מרגיש שזה עוזר לי לברוח, לשכוח הכל, להקים משפחה אחרת. המלך האחרון נרצח לפני סוף המאה, והרוצח החייכן למד תורה, ובר אילן צריך לרקוד, אין שאלה, צריך לרקוד, אין תשובה, אין שאלה.
Thank you so much. That was the fantastic voice of Evyatar Banai. He is an Israeli folk singer, I guess you could say, and that number was called Bereshit. The English translation to that would be Genesis. A lot of really interesting facts about that singer-songwriter. He actually doesn't perform that song anymore because he has become a lot more conservative, and like the rest of this show, that song was very left-leaning. So without further ado, we have the first interview that I have for tonight with Maxine Fuchsen of the Jewish Voice for Peace. We're going to talk a little bit about the results of the Israeli elections, her thought about it, and also some of what she does for this amazing organization. If you haven't checked it out, you really should. And I'm really happy to be here, really happy to have you listening to us. And here we are.
Hi, my name's Maxine Fuchsen, and I live here in Portland. And my background is that for work all my life, I've been a nurse practitioner and a nurse, and have always really seen that as a path in social justice. So I have a real passion around health, and particularly healthcare for communities who are underserved and not heard at the table, and just making sure that people have really good access to health and healthy lives as much as you know we can create that. And my political activism work has always been around human rights and social justice from the perspective of working against racism, working against Islamophobia. I've done a lot of work around immigration justice, and then of course also Palestine justice. And that kind of came from learning a lot about the Middle East in the mid 80s and traveling I had been to Israel as a college student. I had a really good friend who is Israeli, and I spent a summer there. And I'm Jewish. I grew up in not a Zionist home, so sort of a love for Israel, a sense of Zionism was not part of my upbringing. So I don't think I really had to go through that whole process of unlearning or kind of shedding my Zionist perspective, but I just was always really interested in the Middle East.
Yeah, and it, you know, it comes hand in hand because that's kind of an issue also with ever criticizing the countries that Zionism kind of goes hand in hand with being Jewish, unfortunately, for a lot of people.
For a lot of people, yeah. I think a lot of us are working about dissecting those two parts, two things apart, that being Jewish and feeling really strong and good in your traditional Jewish roots, which I do, and more I have, and it's been very liberating to separate that from Zionism. So, so I would say since the mid-'80s, I've been really involved in working around justice for Palestine.
That's fantastic. And so with that being said, of course, the Israeli election just wrapped up. What are your views about the results and what do you think that means for the Palestinian people?
Yeah, well, you know, I think in terms of the results, I don't think that there was any hope that the results were going to be any different. And I don't think that there was any difference in the two major candidates. And I think that the elections were, you know, pretty much a sham.
Yeah. I mean, you have one party that's white and blue, which really can't get any more nationalistic than that.
They chose those colors, I think, because of the Israeli flag.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, Gantz as a Israeli general. I mean,
yeah. It had, I think, three former chiefs of staff, so the IDF on the less conservative.
Right, exactly. And, you know, that was really their message. They wanted to come across and be able to say, no, Netanyahu, you're not the only one that can be tough and strong. And here in 2014, you know, Gantz was bragging about the slaughter of the Gazans in that 51-day horrible war. So I think... there wasn't a choice in this election. So I think, you know, it's kind of like Trump got elected in Israel. And very similar, you know, I think the racism, the just outright nationalistic fervor, the militarism, the corporate deals he's going to make probably to keep himself from getting indicted. You know, I think it's just a horrible situation, but I don't think that it would have been different. I don't think the Palestinians saw that there was any difference between the two main parties. And certainly, I think if you believe in human rights and if your goal is a just solution, a just end to this horrible situation where everybody's human rights and dignity and freedom are respected, this election was not going to be the way to get there by any means.
No, it was definitely not representative, I don't think at all, of the further, like the big diverse group of people that make up that whole region. And the way that the bigger parties kind of swallowed up the smaller parties created just a vacuum. And the parties that do have... Palestinian or Arab Israeli representation, they don't even exist because they got swallowed up in the whole two-party system that they're trying to instill.
Right, and broken apart. And yeah, it's just, you know, it's I mean, I don't think elections are the way that this is going to be solved. And I think that's really that what the Palestinians feel. There wasn't a lot of interest in the election from the Palestinians. I mean, whether it's Palestinian citizens of Israel, you know, really there was a big discussion boycott the election because it is such a sham. There's totally no validity to this election, you know, and I think that had a perfectly reasonable, understandable way of thinking to boycott. And, you know, those who said, no, you know, we need to let people know we are still here and we need to, though our voice isn't going to really make a difference symbolically, it's important to exercise that right. And I can see that perspective as well. But I think, and then, of course, all of the Palestinians on the West Bank and in Gaza who have absolutely no right to vote, I think there wasn't a ton of interest in the election because they saw it for what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And be anything to bring, you know, a just solution. So, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that, I think also the beginning of March of this year marked the second or the first official year for the March of Return demonstrations.
That's right.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering how, how basically it was used as a way to scare the people to kind of go at a more radical, more militarized kind of candidate.
You mean that the Great March of Return?
Yeah, used as kind of like, oh, this is exactly why we need to have more of a military presence, and this, you know, just kind of used as almost propaganda against, when really the only thing that people are marching for is to have basic human rights in mm-hmm. a place that they are not free to roam in or out or even about, whether it's, you know, going fishing further enough that they can actually catch fish in a even the water, you know, even the water is militarized.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I was in Gaza three times in 2011, 2012 and 2014 doing healthcare. And the siege is brutal. It's an absolutely brutal, illegal situation. And I think, you know what, I think the Palestinians, as always, lead us and show us is that the importance of just keeping the focus. I mean, the election almost was like a distraction.
Exactly, yeah.
I think what the Palestinians know, and those of us who see ourselves as fighters alongside the Palestinians, as allies, if you want to use that word. I like somebody who said freedom fighters, because it means we all have skin in the game, and our skin is that we care about justice for Palestinians and justice for immigrants in this coming to this country, and justice around ending a racist agenda here as well as in Israel. So for all of these things, I think what we see more and more is that the election is a little bit of just, you know, more than a little bit, it's irrelevant. It's, you know, we have to keep focused on the work that we need to do, and that we need to be supportive of the Palestinians in this case to be doing, and that is continuing the Great March of Return and continuing the BDS movement. And nothing that's going to come from Netanyahu or from Gantz is going to be anything towards the vision that is held by the Palestinians for justice. And our job, I think, is to keep working towards that vision, and keep working, you know, as the best allies we can along that road with them.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's why the work that you do at Jewish Voice for Peace is so important. I was wondering if you can tell us more about that as well.
Well, my work with Jewish Voice for Peace is actually at the national level. So I'm active on the Health Advisory Council with Jewish Voice for Peace. So that's a national part of the organization. And if you want to know more about it, you can go onto the Jewish Voice for Peace website. And our Health Advisory Council has a tab on that page. And our mission in the Health Advisory Council is that I think all of us who are in healthcare see, again, that intersection between the lens of healthcare, which encompasses human rights. And so using that lens as a way to educate and to advocate for a just peace, a peace with justice, freedom, and dignity for the Palestinians, for all people that live on that land. So the work that we do is every week we present a human rights violation and hero. So we really look to what's happening. A lot of Palestinians are our heroes, other people across the world internationally that are just doing really important human rights work for Palestine justice. It's pretty easy to find violations every week because human rights violations from Israel abound, whether it's how they are responding in Gaza or how they respond to children in prison or how they respond to people who are attempting to get asylum in Israel, Africans who are coming to Israel to get asylum and being totally mistreated, not at all, unlike Donald Trump's approach with asylum seekers. So we do that kind of work. We have webinars to talk to people about human rights work that's happening in Israel-Palestine. We do a media watch bulletin once a month where we compile just lots of articles across the spectrum of what's being put out around human rights and health disparities and how occupation and racism and the apartheid system impacts the health of people. So so that's really my work largely right now around Palestine, and it's with the National Jewish Voice for Peace.
Yeah, well, that's really, really admirable and really important. I think that maybe some listeners might not understand that, for example, in Gaza, because of the occupation, a lot of times goods can't come in and out, and those goods include medication. They include, you know, sanitary supplies that people do not receive, whether the military closes the border or whether it's just some sort of violence that occurs. These things, these medication from, you know, diabetics to heart medication that every one of us needs. We all know someone who's sick. So imagine them not being able to get their medication just of their geographic location, just because of their race, just because of their religion.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the particular case of Gaza, which is, of course, part of Palestine, is that for over a decade now, the Israelis have imposed a siege. And as you mentioned, it includes the siege on the side, on the seaside, which is the Mediterranean. So fishers are only, fishing people can only go out 6 nautical miles or 9, depending, they change it every once in a while, but not enough to deep sea fish. And of course, if you live along this beautiful stretch of Mediterranean Sea, and you're aware of the history of Gaza, where seafood, fish was a huge industry, that no longer exists. The southern border is a very short border with Egypt, but that, of course, is mostly closed. And then the rest of the border is with Israel, which is really hermetically sealed. I mean, Gaza is under siege. And you're exactly right that it includes all kinds of goods, including, you know, food, fuel, essential medical supplies, including medications, including things you just don't even think of. There's, I remember walking through a neonatal intensive care unit at one of the hospitals in Gaza City, and there were no babies in it, not because there are not premature infants or sick infants who need a neonatal intensive care unit, but they could not get the components to fix the machinery for that unit. So all the incubators were just sitting unused in a hall because they were lacking supplies. So any of that kind of stuff does not, medical supplies, machinery, anything that the Israeli government deems could be dual purpose used, in other words, used for weapon making, which is a huge long list. And it's really very extreme. It's not really just dual use. It's harassment. It's, you know, the injustice of the siege. There was a Israeli military official that once, you know, that actually said, we're going to send in enough calories so people don't starve, but we don't want to see people thrive. So it's a very calculated scheme about what gets let in. And so Gaza is an economy and a people that are greatly, greatly suffering, completely of a human-made situation. It's such a highly educated population of people. It's just an amazingly gracious, wonderful place. And again, just not, you know, you walk around sort of feeling like, oh my God, everybody's in handcuffs, because you just can't exercise the right to live with dignity and to raise your children without the fear of drones and bombs and an incursion by the Israelis at any time. I mean, children in Gaza have lived through three wars. If you're 7 or 8 years of age, that's what you know is trauma. And in Gaza, it's ongoing trauma. It's not post-traumatic stress. It's ongoing stress because it's continuing to happen. And, you know, the lethality that Israel has used in responding to the Great March of Return is just horrifying. It's just horrifying. And so I think to get back around to what's our responsibility, why is this an issue for us as Americans? And, you know, people will say, well, there's so many issues in the world. And yes, there are, and we can't close our eyes to any of them, but very few have the impunity that Israel has. You know, we give Israel more money than any other nation in the world. We are Israel's best friend for life, if you listen to, all of the administrations. And now this one under Trump and Jared Kushner and Friedman and, you know, the whole group of them, I think what we're going to see is it's going to acceleratingly get worse. And so I think our responsibility is to hold that flood back. And fortunately, I think, you know, we do have people who are doing that, of course. You know, there's good new people in the Congress. You know, we have Ilhan Omar, who I think for many of us is our hero. And
yeah, I definitely have to agree on that one, yeah.
You know, I think we're all trying to push back to the flood as much as we can. And it is, the tide is turning. You know, we're hearing people in Congress even outraged about the mistreatment of Palestinian children in Israeli detention. And there was a bill, and there will hopefully be another bill that will be introduced. And it's not the big goal at the end of the tunnel there. We're not there, but we're going to take every little incremental step that we can. And I think we have to. We owe it to our Palestinian sisters, brothers, friends, comrades, you know, to just push as hard as we can against this U.S. complicity with the whole thing.
Yeah, and we thank you so much for doing the work that you do. And thank you so much. That was a great interview. Again, thank you, Maxine Fuchsen from the Jewish Voice for Peace, for talking with me, taking time out of her super busy schedule to just educate and talk to the rest of us. And here's just one of my favorite songs. I just want to introduce you to this.
עוד אח אחד ירד אל הקבר, וממה בוכה היא בצעקות שבר. עוד אח אחד ירד אל הקבר, את זעקות אבא שומעים מכל עבר. בן אדם, למה זה לבך כמו קרח? האם נהנה אתה להיות לרוצח? אוזניים השומעות איומים מפיך, מדוע תדבר כך אני אחיך? כל צד טוען שרק אצלו האמת, ובכל יום שעובר אותך מפשע מת. הורג אנשים, לא אכפת לך כלל, לראות בבני אדם איך אתה מסוגל. אמא כואבת ועוד ילד יתום, והמדרכה שוב בצבע אדום. החיים חשובים, הם ובעלי ערך, רצח והרג זו איננה הדרך. עוד אח אחד ירד אל הקבר, וממה בוכה היא בצעקות שבר. עוד אח אחד ירד אל הקבר, את זעקות אבא שומעים מכל עבר. ילד, מה קורה לך? איך השתגעת? באיזה מצב אחי תראה הגעת? לא מעניין אותך, הכל כבר מותר. בעיניים שלך המבט אפל וקר. תחשוב על העתיד ועל יום המחר, לנסות ולשנות אף פעם לא מאוחר. כל עם ישראל די לכל האלימות, לא רוצה לראות עוד בן אדם שימות. נגלה רחמים, נגלה רחמנות,
מגלה חמימות כל דם שנשפך מותיר שובל ריקנות ועד ארצנו טוב לחיות לא לעמוד עוד אח אחד ירד אל הקבר וממה בוכה היא בצעק או שבר עוד אח אחד ירד אל הקבר את זעקות אבא שומעים מכל עבר שאלות כמו כמה זמן נוכל כך להמשיך ולחיות והאם המלחמה שבגבולות מנותקת מהאלימות שאת חיינו משתקת נראה שהמתח פה הפעם לא נגמר פישי הגדול היה זה שאמר שכולנו שווים בסופו של דבר אז מדוע זה את זה נשיב אל האפר
for tuning in. That was Od Ach Echad by the Dag Nachash. Loosely translated, it's Another Brother by the Fish Snake. Strange, I know. It's just another really awesome anti-war song that's by a very diverse group of Israeli musicians. Next up, I have another fantastic interview with Noah Durbin. Noah is one of my very good friends, as well as a new immigrant to the state. I talked to her to gain her opinion and perspective about what it's like to come to America in such a politically turbulent time and just kind of her impression. She currently lives in sunny LA, California, and here is our fantastic, fantastic conversation.
My name is Noah, and I'm a 25-year-old Israeli living in Los Angeles for a year now. I used to do some to volunteer with the United Nations Women here in LA as a partnerships coordinator and just creating and sustaining meaningful relationships with community partners, governmental officials, city officials. All of the relationships are meant to push further women's rights issues and human rights issues.
That sounds fantastic. And how long have you been in the States for now?
For 1 year, a little bit over a year, yeah.
And what are some of your initial impressions? You came at a very turbulent time, I guess, in American history or presence. What are some of your impressions as far as coming from a place like Israel and seeing how things are here?
It's really sad because up until Trump, you know, under the Obama administration, I would feel that moving to the States would be significantly different than the political environment in Israel, like way different. And since I moved here under Trump, it kind of feels like just a new Israel that has no public health care and education.
And how come that's hilarious. What makes you say that? What's some of the things that you see that will make you make those correlations?
I'm an immigrant, first of all, so I'm experiencing firsthand kind of the attitude towards immigration, which is, to me, absolutely ridiculous, given that everyone here is an immigrant except for the Native Americans. So that kind of pisses me off. It's been really hard to get all the papers in check, and they removed the regulation that says how long it will take for your entire process, and so now I'm just hanging in the air without the ability to do healthcare, without really any rights. Even though I'm married to an American citizen, tax-paying citizen, upright citizen. So it kind of sucks, and also I suffer from chronic neurological conditions, so I do feel the lack of public health care here. which is one thing that made me appreciate Israel when I came here. And in terms of the political environment in the streets in LA, you don't really feel like there's a rise in hatred. But since I'm a political person and I'm involved, I can see that on the official level, changes have been made, and it's kind of, also the whole wall thing, it's kind of like, why are you so obsessed with us, you know?
So yeah, the wall thing, I think what you're referring to is the fact that in the border there is, in Israel, there between the West Bank and Israel territories, there is a huge, disgusting, gigantic wall, and it's an eyesore.
Yes, it's even, I would even go to say that the West Bank wall is actually even a worse thing than the proposed Mexican wall, because it's actually keeping people who have, it's not keeping two countries apart, it's keeping people from their own country.
Exactly, yeah.
There's even something even uglier and more deep than that. Like, obviously a wall is a bad idea anyway, especially when it has to span like the size of Europe or something. it's not a practical thing. And it's kind of, you know, how is all buddy-buddy with Bibi, and they're talking about their walls and their airplanes and how much they like to take advantage of people, and they really have a lot in common.
That's true. They also they have the fake news thing that they say oftentimes, which is frightening. But yeah, that is true.
No warnings with the left-wing people are going to vote. You have to vote. And it's kind of like they're both kind of like nihilists, you know, they just want to watch it burn, they don't care really, and they just want to abuse the system. But I will say that Trump, I used to think Bibi is just an idiot, but since Trump, I actually think that Bibi is, it makes Bibi look intelligent.
But those are, I can see that those are strong words, those are strong words. So what is it exactly that made you come out to the States?
My husband, he's an American citizen, and he has a career here and he has friends here. So I'm still at the point where I'm building my stuff. So I just came here to join him.
It's fantastic. It's love knows no bounds.
No bounds. And also there are a lot of amazing things here that I love. LA is kind of inhospitable to foreigners, but at the same time it's also very hospitable to foreigners. It's a bit of everything.
Yeah, it says it likes the culture, doesn't like the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, kind of like that. But yeah, I feel also that there are a lot of great things about America. The level of democracy here is very high, much higher than Israel. The level of civic involvement.
Interesting. And is that something that you saw while working with the UN Council, or is that just something that you noticed from your neighbors and colleagues?
Actually, I noticed both. In my community here in Boyle Heights, where I live, it's East LA, it's a mostly Mexican community, and they have very active city council. People are voting, people are putting signs in their yards, vote this, vote that, and just those things are really refreshing to me. And I also came one time to vote in the state elections with my husband, and I saw that people here actually vote on bills, on the bills themselves. And in Israel, it's kind of like you give the keys to the people and then they go ahead and screw you without your involvement, and you don't really have a say once they've been elected. Here it's always like a ongoing checking in with the people, even though it doesn't feel maybe that way, or people maybe are not aware of how bad it can be and how lucky they are that they do have a say. But I feel that there is a very high level of say for the people. And just the fact that you can go to any city council meeting here, any committee meeting, it's open to the public. It's usually taped and broadcast. So you really can get involved much more than you can in Israel.
Now, were you political when you were living in Israel as well?
I was more in like the community activity that I've done, because I was volunteering a lot with Eritrean refugee and Sudanese refugee children. So I've done a lot of work in that area, just, you know, a lot of times because of their situation and them not being recognized as refugees by the state of Israel, they're forced to work pretty much slave wage and crazy hours and have no access to like normal services. So the children are often just left in the streets for hours and days and a lot of times neglected. And there's a lot of also post-trauma because a lot of the people who came have been tortured on the way. So just helping with the kids, helping the parents seek the help that they need and get the services they deserve, connecting them with the other organizations, stuff like that. So that's what I've done in Israel. And I'm also about to get my bachelor's in political science and international relations.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
go ahead.
Like a direct political work, but to me also everything is political in the end of the day.
Now, what makes you say that?
Because politics is not just being for this or that or, you know, doing campaigns. It's everything. Like, culture can be political, especially in a place like LA, where you see the whole rap culture and hip-hop culture, how it correlates with the injustices that go in the neighborhoods, where oftentimes, you know, it's kind of really, in a way, racially segregated in a modern way, and impacts everything. So, and it creates a culture, and it creates a people, and it creates a food, and it creates a fashion. So everything relates, and these things ultimately lead to who you choose as your elected official and what their policies would be and how much power the people have versus how much power the elite and the political elite have.
That's true. I definitely agree with you on that one. And the grassroots, you know, getting to know your neighbor, introducing yourself and talking to them and understanding them is the first way to, I don't know, just take that wall of, you know, that metaphorical wall of I'm scared of the unknown and pushing through it and finding that you're probably the same person, just you look a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's really, you can really tell in LA because it's very big. A lot of times people who live in West Hollywood or in Beverly Hills, they never really leave their area. And they have no idea what's going on in East LA, in Compton, in South Central. They have no really grasp of who are these people, what are they doing, what drives them, what, you know, they really are just isolated. So the importance of just reaching out and seeing who you live with and getting to know people is very, there's a lot of significance to it.
Yeah, then putting up walls is the opposite way of getting all of that done. So you mentioned that there is just the kind of the segregation and the oppression that people go through. So going back to when you were living in Israel, did you ever see that on the side of the Palestinians that are going through so much, human rights violations, so many issues? Have you ever seen like the kind of positive kind of outlets for that through the popular culture?
In Israel, you mean?
Yeah.
Actually, not really. It's kind of embarrassing to say, but I just met my first Palestinian here in LA.
Wow, okay.
This time I spoke to an actual Palestinian from the other side, not as a, you know, like, he wasn't selling me vegetables, he wasn't my physician, you know, just meeting a person. First time it happened to me is here in LA.
Wow, so you traveled so far to see a neighbor.
Exactly, and you don't see any presence of really Arab culture and not to even mention Palestinian culture in the Israeli culture, you know. Mm-hmm. it's more like Taco Bell level, you know. It's like we took their food.
Oh.
We called them our own, the food, but where are the people? Well,
that's interesting.
Actually, in regards to the segregation, I feel like a lot of times in my neighborhood still shooting happens and stuff like that, like gang stuff, and people are really not feeling safe in their own homes. And even when you leave your home, if you have a color that is not white, you are always subjected to more danger. And that kind of reminds me of the Palestinian situation, that they're kind of never safe.
Hmm.
Not in their home and not outside their home. They're always subjected to harassment and to prejudice and to injustices. And actually, there's a lot in common, I feel, with the minorities here in America and the Palestinians, weirdly.
Interesting. Can you go into that a little bit more?
Yeah, just I feel like the feeling of really not being safe and being a victim of bias and just really being profiled for who you are.
That's interesting. I definitely that definitely makes sense. Yeah,
it's very hard to escape it for Palestinians and also for minorities here, and especially if you're from a socioeconomic if you're not doing well, if you're not well off, it's almost impossible to break this cycle of being incarcerated and losing your rights. And then your children grow up seeing that their parents have lost their rights. And what are my options? Crime. And it's kind of like how Palestinians also are driven to terrorism and to other illegal activities. It's kind of similar, I feel.
Yeah, as in to say, you have some sort of trauma that happens in your family, so then you are, you are living in a situation that's been calculated to make you disenfranchised, and the only way that you can get out of it is unfortunately through quick money, which is always going to be crime. And in a situation like, you know, in Palestinian situations, it's going to mostly lead to terrorism.
Yes, it's the desperation and the lack of belief that you can really get anywhere.
Yeah, and it's a calculated, you know, it's when you, all of your resources literally go up in smoke because of violence, what else do you have left?
Mm-hmm. And I feel that America and Israel actually have a great potential to learn and to better themselves and to better each other based on these experiences, if only those people would have voices.
Interesting. What do you mean by that?
Let's say something good happens and it stops being segregated here or in Israel in a way, and people can get more involved, or people can feel they can accomplish something and, you know, live a full life without fear. The conclusions from that can really apply either way. Like, if it happens in America, they can take from it to Israel and the other way around. So there's actually a lot of potential for resolution, and it doesn't feel that way. But if something is resolved, it will be very impactful, I think.
Yeah, and I think it would definitely be through the people, because we see that negotiations and peace talks, it never encompasses what the people need. And I'd go as far as to say that even the current election, the person, Bibi Netanyahu, the prime minister, isn't quite, in my opinion at least, representative of the majority of the people that are living in Israel right now.
Mm-hmm. I have a weird feeling about the majority in Israel, because I would like to say that I feel like he doesn't represent the majority, but I kind of feel like he does.
Well, the majority that's willing to vote. You know, if you've had the same person in office for 10 years now, like, you know, you're going to start think, I can't remember anyone else being the prime minister for over 20 years now. And so, you know, I can definitely see how maybe you're thinking, well, what's this going to do?
Exactly. People are thinking, what's this going to do? Arabs aren't voting. Obviously, the millions of Palestinians who live in the occupied Israeli territories, they are not able to vote.
Exactly. And that's a huge thing, that they are not able to vote. And they are so many people that directly get affected from whomever is in power in the Israeli government.
It's also the hypocrisy of the occupation, because if you occupy a land and you take it as like a piece of your own land, then everybody who's in that land should have the same rights.
Yeah.
But what they're doing is they're saying this is Israel when Jews are there. But when Palestinians are on the other side of the street, no, this is Palestine. You know?
Yeah.
So they're playing on this, it's not Israel, it is Israel. It's not Israel when they have to pay taxes, but it is Israel when they have to vote and they have to do the army. And it's kind of just really a charade.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I think most of Israelis in diaspora and in Israel feel, that it's just kind of like a big circus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just... And also paying taxes in Israel feels really bad, because what are you paying for? It's not anymore a socialist country. So basically you're paying for the occupation.
Yeah.
And you don't really get much back. Like the social welfare in Israel is you can't live by it. If you really have a disability, you can't really live off social security. So it's not like you get so much back. It's not like we have an amazing infrastructure of trains, you know, that, oh yeah, I'm paying for the trains. Basically, you're paying for really good, very high level standard of living for the occupation.
Which is horrible, just unbelievable. And it's right there. It's not even, they don't even mask it anymore.
And I really hope Americans won't have to do the same with their taxes, just using their taxes to pay for a wall. You know?
That wall is... Anyways, I'm definitely interested in the correlations and like the lines that you drew from being here and seeing what's going on right now in the political climate, and coming from such a, you know, politically charged place than Israel. And I am very, very so happy and honored to have you on our show. And are there any kind of final thoughts or anything that you'd like to share with us?
No, really. Thank you, Tammy. And it's also important for me to mention that people like you still give me hope, both for Israel and America. It's good to have you in my life.
It's good to have you. Thank you so, so much. And I appreciate you taking the time.
Sure. Thank you.
Take care. Hey, everyone. Thank you very much. That concludes my show. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in. We are in our pledge drive. Please go on kbu.fm/give to donate. I'd like to thank everyone who joined me on this episode. I really appreciate it. You're listening to Popular Education. And here's just one last tune before your next show.
אחד, הוא מספר המדינות מהירדן לים. שתיים, מספר המדינות שיום אחד יהיו כאן. שלוש שנים וארבע חודשים הוא הזמן שנתתי לצהל. לא הייתי בקבע, הייתי בנחל. 5 שקלים עולה נסיעה באוטובוס עירוני, בעצם 4.90, אבל עד שהדיסק יצא נותרו עוד כמה חודשים. הייתי בן 6 כשסדאת בא לארץ, בן 7 כשהם חתמו על ההסכמים. 8 הוא המספר של אורי מלמיליאן, שהוא בלי שום ספק גיבור ילדותי. 9 פעמים הייתי קרוב מדי לפיגוע, לפחות נכון לעכשיו. 10 התשובה הכי ישראלית לשאלה מה המצב.
גם אני כמו כל היהודים עסוק במספרים 24-7-12 חודשים. גם אני כמו כל היהודים עסוק במספרים 24-7-12 חודשים. גם אני כמו כל היהודים עסוק במספרים 24-7-12 חודשים. גם אני כמו כל היהודים עסוק במספרים 24-7-12 חודשים.
אשתי בת 27, אני בן 30. מתקרב לעוד הרגע בוא נרצה לבלעדים, אבל נרצה גם שיגיע להם הכל, אוכל, בגדים, כדורגל, משחקים. את מנכ״ל בנק הפועלים זה לא מטריד, כי הוא מביא הביתה כל יום 29,816 שקלים
כל יום?
חלקו את זה ב-2, ב-5, ב-10, וזו עדיין משכורת חודשית יפה להיום. יסכימו איתי אלפי מפוטרי מפעלי הטקסטיל בישובי הדרום. הצמיחה בישראל ב-2001 הייתה מינוס 0.6%. אנשים שעד אתמול הייתה להם עבודה רואים עגבניה בפח וחושבים
איזה ביפור.
מצב המשק הישראלי הוא החמור ביותר ב-48 השנים האחרונות.
48? מוכר לי המספר הזה, איפה לעזור לי?
חברות סלולר מתחרות על האוזן של 75% מהישראלים. מנכ״ל סלקום הולך לבנק פעם בחודש, מפקיד משכורת 674,000 שקלים. יש 250,000 מובטלים, 36,000 מהם נוספו השנה. כנראה שאלי לוזון צודק כשהוא שר.
גם אני כמו כל היהודים עסוק במספרים 24-7-12 חודשים. גם אני כמו כל היהודים עסוק במספרים 24-7-12 חודשים. גם אני כמו כל היהודים עסוק במספרים 24-7-12 חודשים. גם אני כמו כל היהודים עסוק במספרים 24-7-12 חודשים.
סייפנים מציעים 10 שקלים, דיסק שעבדנו עליו 4 שנים. הדולר עלה בעשרות אגורות, תוך 3 שבועות הזניק את שכר הדירה למאות אלפי אנשים. בכיס אין מספיק לספרי לימוד וטיטולים. מה עשתה הממשלה בתגובה? קיצצה 12% מקצבאות הילדים.
כשאישה תלך לעבודה היא תביא
כל שעה
7 שקל ו-20 אגורות.
בממוצע פחות ממה שגבר באותה עבודה היה מביא, ואני לא נביא. אבל בין 500 ל-600 איש ימותו השנה בכביש. אדוני, כבוד שר התחבורה, איך הנתון הזה גורם לך להרגיש? ועדיין המספר הכי גדול עד היום, שמגלם את התקווה אבל ממחיש את האסון, זה שכשאומרים אותו כל אדם שפוי עובר לדום הוא 6 מיליון.